Good afternoon. It's just before noon, 45 seconds away. Lovely day here in Kodiak, 49 degrees, fair skies out at the airport, 77% humidity with 10 miles of visibility. We have a northeast wind about 8 miles an hour, cooling things off a bit. We're up at 52 here on Signal Hill right now. We are going to have sunshine this afternoon with a high near 50 and southeast winds only 5 to 10 miles an hour. Rain is called for tonight still, mainly after 1 in the morning though. Low around 44, southeast winds move up to about 15 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation climbs to 80%. Be a long day though. We got until 10, 11 o'clock probably for light today. It doesn't go down until 10:38 tonight. Tomorrow, the rain is still in the forecast. 100% chance of it raining tomorrow. High up near 50 again with southeast winds 20 to 25 miles an hour. Thanks for tuning in. This is Public Radio KMXT Kodiak, 100.1 FM, live on the web at kmxt.org. For our villagers, translator is there, K269AW in Larson Bay, K269AX in Carlick, K269AY in Akiak, K269AZ in Old Harbor, and K220AU in Port Lyons. Hope you all have nice weather out there today, too. Small craft advisory comes up for tomorrow in Chiniac and Marmot Bays. Today, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 15 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas in Chiniac Bay. Marmot Bay today, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 15 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas. NPR headlines coming right up.
Lakshmi Singh, a sobering outlook today on the path out of the coronavirus pandemic. A new NPR PBS NewsHour Marist poll finds 2/3 of Americans believe life will not be back to normal for at least 6 more months. Here's NPR's Domenico Montanaro.
65% of Americans don't think they'll be able to resume their normal daily lives for at least 6 months. And with many states reopening businesses, 3/4 of people say they are concerned about a second outbreak of the virus. Experts say without strict social distancing, that's a very real possibility. There's a big political divide on these questions. Republicans are less likely to think that normalcy will take 6 months or more to return, and they're less likely to be concerned about a second outbreak. That's perhaps not surprising, given President Trump urging states to reopen even ahead of his own federal guidelines, and with largely conservative protests springing up around the country, demanding an end to restrictions aimed at stopping the spread of the virus. Domenico Montanaro, NPR News, Washington.
Months after the temporary shutdown, Orlando's Walt Disney World's in the process of reopening under new coronavirus restrictions. Workers and the limited number of people allowed into the entertainment park are required to wear face coverings. Their temperatures will also be checked before they're allowed inside. At the same time, Vice President Mike Pence was in Central Florida meeting with tourism officials and talking to Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, who continues to claim that most Floridians are safe from coronavirus. However, recent developments have raised new questions about whether the state's public health data may have been manipulated in favor of a campaign to reopen Florida's economy. Well, Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York's launching a public service campaign to warn people not to get complacent about wearing a mask. Here's NPR's Windsor Johnston.
Governor Cuomo cited data that shows people who work in jobs that require face masks have up to half of the infection rate of the general population in New York City.
The mask works.
The governor also warned against complacency in the weeks ahead.
If people get arrogant, if people get cocky, if people get casual, if people undisciplined, you will see that infection rate go up.
The governor says the state plans to expand testing programs in higher risk areas. He says testing has shown that about 27% of people in New York City's lower income communities have been infected with the coronavirus, while the overall rate is about 19%. Windsor Johnston, NPR News.
In central Michigan, thousands of flood evacuees are being advised to practice anti-coronavirus measures while they seek shelter from severe floods. We have more from Michigan Radio's Tracy Samilton.
Almost everyone's wearing a mask. They have the cots set up at good distances, and everybody's being really quite careful. And it's really important because a lot of the people here are elderly folks, disabled folks, people in wheelchairs.
That's Tracy Samilton reporting. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
Yesterday, the governor announced that Alaska will be reopening for business at full capacity on Friday. He pointed to consistently low numbers of new cases and an increased testing capacity among reasons for rolling out phases 3 and 4 of the reopening plan simultaneously. While social distancing, wearing masks in public, and generally avoiding others are still recommended, the governor repeatedly said he trusts the judgment of Alaskans to make up their own minds.
I think the people of Alaska get that they need to stay away from folks if they don't want to get the virus, that they need to wash their hands and wipe things down. People get that. That's why we're where we are today. That's why we're opening. Businesses get that. You'll see some businesses that may open or may not. There'll be businesses that open and they have a different configuration or different schedules. That's going to be up to the businesses. That's going to be up to the individuals.
Kodiak doctors say they understand the need to begin reopening the economy, but the basics of COVID prevention, proper hand hygiene, wearing a mask, and limiting social contact are still incredibly important during this time. Curtis Mortensen, medical director at Kodiak Community Health Center, says limiting the bubble of people you interact with will be essential to tracing any new cases that arise.
If you're in close contact with somebody, which means for 10 minutes you're within 6 feet of them, I believe that's the kind of the guideline you guys go off of, you should be able to know how many people you had that type of contact with for the past several days. Because if you ended up getting COVID-19, that's what our public health nurses, our contact tracers are going to be asking you. So if you don't know, if you are around so many people that you couldn't tell me that, then that's problematic, because then we can't trace back and kind of nip these hot spots as they go.
According to Chief Medical Officer Ann Zink, many cases across the country can be traced to a hotspot, meaning an event or gathering where one person had the virus and passed it to many people within a short period of time. Mortensen said that kind of transmission is important to avoid in order to keep the caseload low.
These are situations where there can be massive infection transfer. And so just being aware that just because we've had very little cases in Alaska compared to other people doesn't mean it couldn't spread very, very quickly.
Kodiak doctors also say that people with medical conditions and older people should continue to practice hunkering down. The Alaska legislature convened this week to take up federal CARES Act funding in response to a lawsuit challenging the legality of how the funds were authorized. Part of this billion-dollar package includes money for the Community Assistance Program, which aids local municipal governments. Jared Griffith, KMXT News, has the story.
Tuesday morning, Kodiak came one step closer to receiving additional financial assistance to help recover from the COVID-19 economic fallout. The Alaska House of Representatives passed House Bill 313 by a vote of 38-1 to transfer over $1.5 billion in federal emergency relief funding that, according to the Alaska House majority, will put more money into the hands of Alaskan individuals, businesses, communities, and nonprofits impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. The money will be distributed under specific initiatives called Revised Program Legislative Process, or RPLs. The RPL process is a way for the legislature to accept additional out-of-state funds for items that had already been budget-approved. One of the more notable items includes funding for the Community Assistance Program, which has traditionally been an important part of local municipal budgets. Under the state's distribution, $586.5 million will be distributed to local municipalities based on the Community Assistance Program model. The formula for the current model has been in place since 2016 and is based on a $30 million statewide appropriation. For example, each Alaskan borough received a base amount of $300,000 plus $14.16 per resident. In the current fiscal year, the Kodiak Island Borough was due to receive over $400,000 based on this model. The money was originally in the legislature's budget. However, Governor Mike Dunleavy vetoed that money, indicating that federal money from the Federal CARES Act will be used to replace it. Under this current plan, the borough is slated to receive nearly $5.8 million and the city of Kodiak nearly $12 million. The total federal funding package also includes money for small businesses, fisheries, and education. Once ratified, the bill will soon be sent to the governor's desk for his signature. For KMXT News, I'm Jared Griffin.
Other good news from the Federal CARES Act funding, local businesses having trouble making ends meet and unsuccessful at securing money from last month's Paycheck Protection Program can expect some more relief. An additional statewide $290 million will be used to support small businesses impacted by COVID-19 by providing grants for businesses that were unable to obtain money through the PPP. $100 million is included for Alaska fisheries, including charter operators and fishing tour guides, and $45 million is allocated to help stabilize K-12 classrooms impacted by COVID-19. How these education and fisheries funds are distributed will be determined by an appropriate state office, especially as it relates to education, which has led to some confusion locally. Kodiak Island Borough Manager Michael Powers wrote in a recent manager's budget for the Borough Assembly that direction from the governor's office has been, quote, murky at best on a path forward to supplant federal dollars for state dollars, unquote. You can read the full press release about CARES Act funding and the official updated RPLs about the Community Assistance Program and fisheries on our website, kmxd.org. University of Alaska has released a plan to reopen campuses depending on the COVID-19 threat level. A four-phase approach gradually increases in-person classes and on-campus housing and gives staff the option to work at their offices. In a letter to the university community, UA President Jim Johnson said the plan is not a linear path to reopening and that, quote, it is very likely that we will move back and forth among these phases as the incidence of COVID-19 ebbs and flows in our state and communities, unquote. He says a conservative approach is warranted because the university has higher risk of COVID-19 transmission due to increased travel, group housing, mass gatherings, and asymptomatic people. Johnson will talk about the plan during a governor's press conference tonight at 5 o'clock. First positive case of COVID-19 was found in Kotzebue, according to Manilkuk Association, the regional health care provider. As KOTZ's Wesley Early reports, the positive case from someone who traveled to Kotzebue via Alaska Airlines yesterday afternoon.
Kotzebue City Manager Jeff Congdon says the individual had arrived at the Ralph Wien Airport and was en route to a village in the region.
Voluntarily took the COVID-19 test at the airport and tested positive and has been quarantined in Kotzebue.
Congdon says that there are other passengers on the flight who may have had contact with the person who tested positive. They are also quarantining in Kotzebue.
Manilik is doing tests and monitoring those individuals and also doing contact tracing on the individual who tested positive to find out any other information that they can.
Contact tracing is a term from the Centers for Disease Control that means identifying who an infected person may have had contact with. The Northwest Arctic Borough was set to amend its local health mandate to slowly open up the borough from its previous hunker-down mandate on Tuesday evening. After the first positive COVID-19 case occurred, the borough announced that it was retracting the latest mandate, extending its hunker-down mandate to last through May 31st. That includes a borough-wide curfew from 12:01 a.m. to 6 a.m. Northwest Arctic Borough Mayor Lucy Nelson says that the person who tested positive is not a resident of the borough. She says the fact that a resident of the borough has not yet tested positive shows how effective the borough's health mandates have been.
When we put this hunkering down into place, it was to slow and prevent this disease from entering and growing. So it's really important that people follow these practices of distancing, of wearing masks, of washing your hands.
This is the first positive case of COVID-19 in the Northwest Arctic Borough and one of roughly 400 positive cases statewide. The borough has about 7,600 citizens from Kotzebue and 10 smaller village communities. Reporting in Kotzebue, I'm Wesley Early.
Manilik. Nice word. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced yesterday that the Canadian border will remain closed to non-essential travel for at least another month. On March 20th, the U.S. and Canadian governments mutually agreed to close their border to non-essential travel for 30 days. That closure was extended in April for another 30 days. During a press conference yesterday, Trudeau told reporters that it's too soon to say if the border closure could extend past June 21st.
The situation is changing rapidly, and we're adjusting constantly to what is the right measures for Canadians to get that balance right between keeping people safe and restoring a semblance of normality and the economic activity that we all rely on. We're going to keep making those decisions as time goes on.
Essential travel for U.S. citizens includes lawful permanent residents returning to the U.S., as well as travel for medical reasons, education, necessary work, emergency response, and legal cross-border trade. Recreation and tourism are not considered essential. Alaskans driving home from the lower 48 through Canada are exempt from the closure. However, they are required to make the trip without staying in hotels or making stops along the way except for fuel. According to the Canadian Border Services Agency, border officers ultimately decide whether to allow entry, and the purpose of travel is a factor in their decision. Last Friday, the first units of donated convalescent plasma went to a COVID-19 patient at the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. The plasma is a possible treatment for the disease, and the hospital, along with the Blood Bank of Alaska, is part of a nationwide study to see how well it works. KUAC's Robin reports.
This story is for the 350-ish Alaskans who have recovered from COVID-19. The folks among them who have had laboratory tests to confirm that they had it and are healthy enough now to donate blood plasma.
We think if someone's had COVID and they've recovered, there may be antibodies in there that may help someone else who is acutely ill.
That's Dr. Danny Robinette, the chief medical officer of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. He says people who've recovered from COVID-19 have antibodies, those infection-fighting proteins, in their blood. Plasma, the liquid portion of the blood from people who've recovered, is called convalescent plasma. Robert Scanlon, the chief executive officer of Blood Bank of Alaska, says the plasma is infused from blood donated by Alaskans who have recovered from the coronavirus disease.
We've had approximately a dozen successful collections.
There is no cure for COVID-19, and doctors are still looking at all manners of treatment. Medical centers and blood banks in Alaska are joining a nationwide study through the Mayo Clinic to find out if this might work, if convalescent plasma given to COVID-19 patients boosts their immunity to fight the virus. Normally, a med center would apply to perform a clinical trial and get set up for human testing with oversight called an institutional review board. But, Robinette says, the Food and Drug Administration has thrown the net wide in what's called expanded access.
Through the expanded access program, Mayo Clinic is the IRB and the primary investigator. We take the protocols that they send us. They're really doing the research under special guidelines by the federal government.
Foundation Health Partners, which runs the nonprofit hospital in Fairbanks, already has an established relationship with Mayo Clinic, so it was easy to step into this study. As of this week, there are about 2,300 sites with more than 6,000 doctors and almost 20,000 patients registered in the study. One of those is in Fairbanks.
The first two units of convalescent plasma have been ordered.
Scanlon says the Blood Bank of Alaska is developing a small stockpile of various blood types from donations made by Alaskans who have had the disease.
So the criteria for a donor is that they must have had a diagnosis of COVID-19 documented by a laboratory test and complete resolution of mild to severe symptoms for 28 days or more.
Scanlon says there are not enough accurate, widespread antibody tests available to add other folks. So right now in Alaska, the study will only take people who were tested positive for the virus.
So unfortunately, folks who believe they may have had COVID, and I'm not doubting that they did, but they don't have the documentation to know for sure that they have those antibodies, and that could only be assured with that laboratory test being done.
Convalescent plasma has been studied in the U.S. in outbreaks of other respiratory infections, like the 2009 H1N1 flu, 2003 SARS, and the 2012 MERS epidemics. But Dr. Robinette says those were small studies.
One of the advantages of this is we're going to have a huge number of patients that have been treated to analyze. We may get better data from this than we got from any of those previous trials, which were much smaller patient numbers.
The Mayo Clinic study could influence preventatives like vaccines or treatments for COVID-19, as well as help learning about other diseases. In Fairbanks, I'm Robin.
The virus is pushing local businesses to the brink, and some are calling it quits. That's despite unprecedented sums of government aid that's pouring into the state to help small businesses. As Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, marketplace survival now requires more than financial help.
It's the closing of the neighborhood favorites that are the most obvious. Mama O's, a Spinard restaurant known for its halibut. The Frontier Bar in East Anchorage. In Fairbanks, the Marlin, a music venue. In Juneau, a camera shop that was a fixture downtown. Jonathan White sits on the Anchorage Economic Resiliency Task Force. But don't look to him to paint a rosy picture.
It's not hard to predict that there will be a generational loss of small businesses in the state, you know, in the next 4 to 6 months.
White owns Steam Dot in Anchorage. Coffee fans, do not be alarmed. It's not closing. Not yet, anyway. Steam Dot is one of the 7,000 Alaska businesses that got a Paycheck Protection Program loan. That's the kind that converts to a grant if it's spent on 8 weeks of payroll and a few other allowable expenses. White says there's a giant reckoning coming in about 6 weeks when businesses that got those loans will have exhausted the proceeds.
You know, I think now there's been $1.3 billion of PPP loans that have come to Alaska. And that's what's so striking is that is a ton of money, and it still feels like it's not nearly enough.
Jonathan, we're sunk. We're all going under.
Yeah.
Does it feel that way? I mean, are you supposed to like end the conversation by saying how we're all going to make it in the end? Or?
Well, look, I mean, I don't mean to be, I'm by nature an optimistic person. I think most small business owners and entrepreneurs are. You have to be, right?
White says businesses must be nimble. The ones that are thriving now are those that fill a unique need. They have to adapt to keep staff and customers safe. And White says they should show what they're doing to stay safe. Only a small percentage of Alaska companies will get any of the government coronavirus loans and grants. And anyway, they're just a short-term fix. Thor Stacey, Alaska director for the National Federation of Independent Business, says what entrepreneurs really need to be viable is a healthy economy. And in Alaska, with low oil prices and the lost summer tourism,
it's incredibly grim.
What businesses can draw on, Stacey says, is their entrepreneurial spirit.
That's one of the beautiful things about small business is that as challenging as things get, innovation is driven from individual entrepreneurs and folks that want to figure out a way to keep a business intact and seize whatever opportunity comes out of a difficult time.
Seizing opportunity, that describes Teresa Brown. You could say coronavirus killed her Anchorage businesses. She used to run a daycare and an Airbnb out of her Airport Heights home until mid-March when she realized she couldn't ensure the safety of the kids or guests.
So it was very easy for me to make the decision to close down And adapt, basically. And I just adapted overnight.
If she couldn't raise children, she would raise plants. That very day, Brown says, she started growing organic vegetables, herbs, and microgreens.
Like room by room by room, I turned my entire house into a greenhouse with grow lights and everything.
Now she's all about community gardens and compost co-ops. For cash, Brown says she plans to sell her produce at farmers markets or maybe just in her front yard. She expects to sell vegetable soup, too.
It's not just soup. It's an immune-building soup.
Immune-building soup. Many businesses will die in this pandemic. Others will be born. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Copper River starts with low salmon catches and prices. Some updates after this.
Grundins urges everyone to buy seafood directly from community-supported fisheries at localcatch.org. Grundins, supporting fisheries around the world since 1926.
Cold water from a lingering harsh winter likely kept the salmon from moving up the Copper River on the May 14th opening day. The 12-hour fishery, which officially marks the start of Alaska's salmon season, produced just over 3,000 fish. Another Monday opener tripled the total take to over 9,000 salmon. About two-thirds were sockeyes. As expected, the COVID-forced closures of high-end restaurants caused fishermen's prices to tank, with a base reported at $3 to $3.50 a pound for sockeyes and $6 to $6.50 for kings. They'll settle out higher when bonuses are added in, but it pales to last year's record opening prices at $10 a pound for reds and $14 for kings. Still, Seafood Source reports that fresh sockeyes fetched $34.99 a pound at QFC in Seattle and kings at $44.99. Pike's Place Market had reds at $49.99 per pound and kings at $74.99. And Pike's Place also was advertising pre-orders of whole Copper River King salmon at $659.99. Meanwhile, trollers in southeast Alaska have been catching spring hatchery-bound Chinook salmon since May 1st. Over 1,300 have been caught so far, and prices have tanked, along with fish weights. State managers report an average price of $5.74 a pound, down from $10.12 in 2019. The seasonal Chinook weight so far of 10.9 pounds is a drop of a pound from the five-year average. Find daily salmon catches at Fish and Game's Blue Sheet and in-season summaries, and find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by Ocean Beauty Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
The weather is lovely. 49 degrees out at the airport, 77% humidity with a northeast wind of 8 miles an hour blowing, 10 miles of visibility, and it's really sunny outside. High near 50 today. We're there already. We've climbed up to 54 here on Signal Hill. Southeast winds predicted to be about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Rain moving in tonight, mainly after 1 a.m., low around 44. Southeast winds 15 miles an hour, 80% chance of rain tonight, moves up to 100% for tomorrow. With a high near 51, southeast winds pick up 20 to 25 miles an hour. It's the 20th of May, 5:36. The sun came up, goes down at 10:38. That means we've broken 17 hours and 3 minutes of daylight today. 3 minutes and 44 seconds of daylight gain still. 69 still the record high in 1993, 30 the record low in 1985. The synopsis, weak high pressure sets up over the Gulf through Thursday morning. A front enters the western Gulf Thursday morning and moves to the central Gulf by Friday morning. Marmon Island is Sikkenak small craft advisory through Thursday. Southwest 15 8-foot seas today. South 20 becoming southeast 30 after midnight. 8-foot seas and rain. Tomorrow southeast 25, 10-foot seas rain. This afternoon in Chiniak Bay, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 15 in the afternoon, 3-foot seas. Tonight, southeast 24-foot seas, rain, small craft advisory tomorrow with southeast winds of 25 knots, 7-foot seas and rain. About the same Marmot Bay, variable less than 10, becoming southeast 15 this afternoon, 3-foot seas. Southeast 25-foot seas and rain tonight, small craft advisory tomorrow, southeast 25, 8-foot seas and rain. In the Shelikov Strait, southwest 15, 3-foot seas this afternoon, small craft advisory tonight, east 15 up to 25 after midnight, 4-foot seas building to 7 feet after midnight with rain, east 20, 7-foot seas and rain tomorrow. For tides in the Kodiak District, we're due a high tide here at about just before 2 o'clock this afternoon, 6.62 feet. Low tides at 7:25 tonight, 1.7 feet. On the west side, your high tide's at 2:18, 12.9 feet, and the evening low tide's at 8:11 p.m., 2.1 feet. Community sit tonight with the Kodiak History Museum. Join them via Zoom on their Facebook page for a mindfulness exercise and evening routine, 7 o'clock tonight. Kodiak Borough is having a regular meeting tomorrow night at 6:30. We will be broadcasting the meeting. If you check the mirror today, you'll notice that their meeting is going to be face-to-face tomorrow with a limited gallery of 50 people that can participate that way. If you don't want to do it in person, you can turn on KMXD and listen to the meeting. The library, again, is having a bingo game and other activities online. Check them out. You can email Lori to participate, LoriLMadsen@city.kodiak.ak.us. And Monday, because of the holiday, we're closed. They're closed. A lot of places are closed. Happy Memorial Day.